Grim.
I'm Zolgar. That's Kaiju.
And this is Two Idiots and a Dog, Idiots on Film,
where we explore movies that we love
or think are important for pop culture.
This week, we are talking about an absolutely terrible 80s time capsule film. Which one? I'm not even sure anymore. Oh, wait, I think it was The Lost Boys.
So, first of all, I'm going to kill you in your sleep. And you're going to deserve it. Second of all, we chose to do The Lost Boys for a few reasons. First of all, it is a classic of 80s cinema. And it's also one of the keystone vampire movies. That is not an exaggeration by any stretch. It is considered one of the vampire movies you have to see. And so we needed to do a vampire movie eventually because, you know, we like to do movies that have some element that attracts Zolgar or myself or both of us, you know, hence we frequently do obligatory kaiju movies, etc. And I am a big fan of vampires.
And I am not.
So in order to get Zolgar to do a vampire movie, I knew I had to pick one of the important, relevant ones.
Fun fact, actually, I picked Lost Boys.
That's true. Which one was I originally doing?
I don't know if there was one, because we had said we wanted to do a vampire movie, and you put forward, I don't remember, did you put forward Blade?
No. No, I didn't put forward Blade, and it wasn't Interview either, because it's going to be a while before I can get you to sit down and watch that one.
I don't remember which one it was, but...
Was it Near Dark?
That sounds right. It may have been Near Dark.
I think it was Near Dark, and then you said Lost Boys because it was the more... It was the bigger vampire movie, and you're not wrong.
And also, I genuinely like Lost Boys, even though I'm usually not a big fan of vampire movies.
Yeah. Not sure how you feel about Near Dark, because you apparently have forgotten repeatedly that you've even ever watched it.
That's the one I watched with DB, right?
Yes.
It was okay.
That would be friend of the podcast, Delinquent Behavior.
Hi, DB.
Yeah, for DB, this type of movie would be autobiographical. 80s punk. Literally. Mohawk and all.
And she's still a troublemaker.
The name is more of a warning label than anything. She's a good friend, though.
She is. You know, speaking of good friends, this is the moment where if he actually gave us something, we'd be putting a message in here from our newest honorary dog Patreon member, Athan Mortis. But he hasn't given us anything, so...
You're still banned.
You are still banned. So there. And give us a message for next episode, bitch.
Yeah. Fucker. All right, so... At this point, some of Idiots on Film is a little bit by rote, right? There's certain topics we're going to have to talk on every fucking movie because they're what makes a movie a movie.
What makes a movie is the fact that it's made of moving pictures.
Not quite that basic.
And they used to be separated from talkies because talkies had moving pictures with talking people. Ooh.
Why do I work with you again?
Because you're an idiot.
True. Very, very true. All right, so the cast. You cannot have a movie without a cast.
Not true. You could have a movie that had no cast in it.
It would be a very shitty, boring movie.
Probably, but you could do it.
There's probably some fucking Art Nouveau director out there who's already done it and thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and everybody around them rolls their fucking eyes every time he brings it up.
He's called James Cameron.
This shit is why we're never going to develop Hollywood content.
I don't want to develop Hollywood content. I don't want to work with those freaks.
Contacts.
Yeah, that too.
God.
I don't want to work with those freaks.
Okay, so our main vampire is Kiefer Sutherland.
Who?
Most people know him from 24.
Is that a band or something?
Yes, Kiefer Sutherland is the name of my cover band. I'll go ahead and scratch his name off the list of future Hollywood contacts. So he'll just hear that and just be like, what the fuck? So this episode is already a shit show.
I do not know why I'm so giggly. I haven't even drank that much of my boozy beverage.
Drinking on the job.
I mean, hey, that's an entire subgenre of podcast.
But that's not our subgenre of podcast.
Well, it is now. Let me go just grab an entire bottle of rum and chug it.
Except I can't get drunk.
I mean, one person drunk, one person sober is funny too.
No, because mostly it's just me looking over at you like, why do I work with this fucking hamster? All right, so
that wasn't that funny. Why am I laughing?
Honestly, Kiefer Sutherland is the biggest name to come out of this movie. The only other one that even piqued my radar was Corey Feldman.
Let's see.
Like, I know they've all been in other stuff, but I mean, like, none of them have, like, stuck in my radar.
Yeah, I think Alex Winter's been around a bit.
Like, I've seen the other rest of the cast and stuff here and there, but, like, nothing that stuck with me, you know?
Actually, Alex Winter is a semi-big name. He's Bill from Bill and Ted.
Oh, yeah, that's where I've seen him. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he was Marco. And then he got staked like a little bitch.
Yep. Whereas, yeah, most of the other cast, they've not done a lot. Or at least not big things. You know, Jason Patrick, that was Michael.
Yep.
He's been pretty consistently acting for the last several decades, but
it's never been like a headline-grabbing blockbuster affair.
I think the biggest thing he's done in the last, like, the biggest thing he's done in the last 20 years, I think, was his role in The Losers, which, I mean, that wasn't even that big of a role or that big of a film.
Yeah, that one flew completely under my radar until you pointed it out, so. But that said, everybody was great in this movie.
Yeah, there was nobody who was just straight up phoning it in.
Even the child actor who plays Laddie wasn't obnoxious.
Chance Michael Corbett.
Of course, how do you make a vampiric child not annoying? They gave him like two lines in the whole damn movie.
And they made him creepy as fuck.
Yep.
That's the way you do it.
That is the way you do it. So before we get into the cast of characters, real quick, we are, after all, two idiots and a dog. So there is something that we should do as a public service.
Both of the dogs survive.
Even the evil one.
Cody and Folsom are best dogs. Those are the names of the dogs that played Nanook and Thorn.
They did a great job, too. They were the bestest doggos.
They were.
Nanook was the, finger quotes, good dog, who also got a vampire kill.
Nanook did get a vampire kill. And Nanook actually also got the first vampire blood.
True. When she bit Michael and snapped him out of it.
Yep.
Because he was entering a fugue state and was going to eat his brother, and the dog went, hell no. Really, MVP of the whole movie.
Yep.
Thorn is the hellhound that works for the head vampire, who turns out to be a total dweeb.
Absolute epic dweeb.
Yep. So, yeah, we are two idiots and a dog, so we'd be remiss if we did not point out that both of the dogs do live, even the so-called bad dog. All right, cast. We got Michael. He's the older brother of our main family. Not really adjusting well to coming to a small town from Phoenix, and almost immediately falls in with a bad crowd because he's kind of disenfranchised. He's a fucking teenager in the 80s. What the fuck do you expect?
Yeah.
The younger brother, Sam, who's a dork, but
doesn't get super annoying with it, like a lot of kid characters did in the 80s. And he actually ends up driving most of the our plot outside of Michael. Like, those two are actually our two main plot drivers.
Yeah, very much so.
And then we've got their mom, who the character annoys the shit out of me, but God, she acted it perfectly.
Yeah, she did a great job in being a very annoying, like, not overbearing 80s mom.
She was the classic soft touch 80s mom. It's to the point of pure frustration. She did fall into one major trope, though, and I'm just going to go ahead and throw it in here because it's the only major trope of the film that I can think of. Most of the other tropes that come up, they twist around a little bit and play with. And that is adults not listening to kids. Now, the scene in question makes sense. Her kid is rambling at her about vampires, and she lives in a world where she does not believe vampires are real, right?
And not only is her kid rambling at her about vampires, he is hysterically, nonsensically rambling about vampires. So even in the world where vampires are real, he sounds nonsense even in a world of vampires being real.
He is clearly in a state of distress. Now, there was a plot point where her boyfriend, he thought her boyfriend was the head vampire and pulled some shenanigans at a dinner, and it didn't work out, and so there's that tension in the background. So this entire conversation where he's hysterically, distressedly discussing vampire threats with her, she keeps bringing it back around to him not liking her boyfriend. So even discounting for a moment the fact that what he's saying is nonsense, she's really not listening because she keeps bringing it back to fallout from that dinner, basically. Like, at no point does she stop and go, wait a minute, he said it wasn't my boyfriend. Something has him upset. Obviously, vampires aren't real, but something has him upset. He has stated it is not the guy I'm dating. What's going on here? That doesn't happen. She keeps bringing it back around to her boyfriend until he finally snaps because she's not listening. And he says that he doesn't care about her boyfriend, to hell with her boyfriend. And then she just shuts him down completely with the, I will deal with you later, young man. Classic 80s adults not listening trope. But other than that, she spends the rest of the movie just being a wet rag, basically. She has no... The only time she ever shows any backbone is one point the guy she's dating makes some comment about the kids, and she immediately is like, well, you know, they're not all bad, type of thing, because they're her kids, protective mom, you know? And he actually remarks on that and does so positively. He was respectful of the fact that she was protective of her kids. And I'm not going to fault her for that either. But, like, overall parenting, though, she kind of gets a... I'll give her a C. She makes a couple of attempts throughout the movie, especially with the older brother, who is clearly going through something. He's going out all night. He's sleeping all day. He's listless. Keep shutting her down when she tries to talk to him, that sort of thing. So, you know, a teenager in the 80s. But she really kind of drops the ball with the younger brother, like, more than once, in my opinion. But of course, this is all just a characterization. The actress did a great job. She really sold the character.
That was kind of an epic ramble.
Yeah, well, your face.
Let's see. We, of course, had Max, the aforementioned boyfriend, who is actually the head vampire.
Yeah, and an amusing twist on lore. In this movie, if you invite them in, you lose all power of them. That means none of the usual weaknesses apply. Crosses, garlic, holy water, none of it works, which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, that was a cool take on it.
But I love the fact that they took the time to rule him out just so they could at the very end go, psych!
And I do actually like his whole thing. So his whole thing was he was trying to get the mom, who, you know, he does comment is a good parent. And his reason for wanting to get the mom is because, well, his boys, that would be David and his gang, were being exceptionally unruly, and Max felt that they could use a mother's touch.
Yeah. And, like, as far as evil vampire plots go, pretty solid.
Yeah.
The main problems with this are all of the plan is focused on manipulation. Because he doesn't just come up to her and be like, I'm a vampire and I want you to join my immortal family. No, he starts targeting her sons first.
Yeah, he wants to convert her sons, because if her sons are converted, then she has to convert, is his logic.
As far as evil vampire plans go, that's a solid B+.
Yeah.
Easy. Argument could be made for A. Non-evil vampire plan, that's a D-, because your entire plan is built on manipulation and basically lies until you can, you know, do the big reveal.
Let's see. Then we, of course, have the Frog Brothers, the teenage vampire hunters, who are, well, they are 80s G.I. Joe cosplayers.
They really are. Oh my god, this movie is so 80s.
So 80s.
We also have the main boy's grandfather.
Who is literally only credited as Grandpa.
Yep, doesn't even have a name. He's on screen, I think, a grand total of 5 to 6 minutes throughout the whole movie.
But he does get the best line in the movie.
He does.
There's one thing I could never stomach about living in Santa Clara. All the goddamn vampires.
And it's the closing line of the film.
It is the closing line of the film.
And what makes it work so good is he has not been involved in any of the vampire shenanigans. He has not been involved in any of the conversations regarding vampires. He has never indicated throughout the whole movie that he knows what a vampire is or that they are real. No, this happens after he shows up at the climax of the movie, rams his truck through the front door, impales the head vampire and kills him, and then he just goes to the fridge, grabs a root beer, takes a swig, and drops that line in front of the, like, traumatized mother and the rest of the cast.
Yep.
Roll credits. Beautiful. Brilliant. We've got a couple of half-vampires. In modern parlance, most of us would call them dompiers because, well, gestures to pop culture. But back then, this movie refers to them as half-vampires. These are people that have been turned but have not had their first kill. So they have not become full vampires. So we've got Star.
Obligatory love interest.
And Laddie. Obligatory child vampire. Michael becomes a half-vampire throughout the course of the movie. And the main plot point is they have to destroy the head vampire before one of them kills or they'll become a full vampire. So we have, I believe it is 4 full vampires, correct?
I think it's 5. We've got Max, David, Marco, Dwayne, and Paul.
Okay, but I wasn't counting Max because we'd already talked about him.
Well, we also technically already talked about David.
Did we? I don't know. I tune out for our own recordings. Who are you again?
I'm not sure. Who are you?
I don't know. All right. So David is, we spend most of the movie thinking David is the head vampire. He's the leader of the gang of boys. He's the one who basically turns Michael. And it's pretty much spelled out that David doesn't really care if he turns or not. His plan was to lure him in to try to get Star to finally kill someone. And that kind of sets off the whole chain of events that causes the main story beats with Sam that ultimately end up disrupting Max's plans.
Yeah. And then Paul, Dwayne, and Marco are, well, they are honestly just David's flunkies that they have one brain cell across the three of them.
And it's usually being held by David.
Yeah.
Who isn't even part of that trio and has his own brain cell.
David's got several brain cells. David is actually not stupid.
No, he's actually an intelligent antagonist in this movie. And you can't help but liking him in spots. Despite the fact that he's a fucking monster.
Oh yeah, and he is definitely spelled out as being a monster.
Yeah. This is not one of those ooh-woo fluffy vampire movies that are popular now.
Vampires do not sparkle.
Don't get me fucking started. Do not get me fucking started. So, ultimately, what ends up happening is we've got, you know, our cast characters, Michael and Sam, get involved with that shit because Michael gets chases after Star, blah, 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 culminates in all the vampires being destroyed, everybody lives happily ever. Woo, yay. And then, of course, Grandpa drops that line.
You forgot the most important character of the movie.
You're right, I did. All hail shirtless saxophone man.
Yep, shirtless saxophone man.
The only one who matters, and we only see him for 2 minutes.
Because they apparently had a big saxophone concert on the beach.
They oiled that man up for that scene.
Yeah.
He shimmered.
The whole purpose of that scene, the only real purpose of that scene, was so that Michael could see Star and decide to do the creepy stalker thing of chase her.
Yep. Now, I'll give Michael a little bit of a pass there because he's a teenager in the 80s.
Yeah. 80s teenager, so, and I mean, this is an 80s movie, so society hadn't quite come to the point of being like, hey, wait a second. Following after a girl is kind of fucking creepy.
Yeah. So.
A needle pulling thread?
Let's talk about visuals.
This was a movie. It had visuals. It was very visual. You could see a lot of things.
Well, that's it for this week. jokes aside, the cinematography was stunning. A lot of the shots they got were really good. And I'm talking just normal, like, camera panning around, getting shots, not weird, flippy, technical camera work here. They did a really good job putting the visual elements of each scene together. The visual effects they mostly hold up. And they mostly hold up because they were minimal throughout the whole movie until the very end.
Yeah, they really relied on not showing you exactly what was happening, so there weren't a lot of just really terrible special effects that, you know, would have looked laughable on the movie screen in the 80s, and today you'd just be looking at it going like, wow, did they even try?
Yeah, I mean, when they're not pretending to be human, the vampire's main method of getting around is flying. They fly to attack their prey, they fly to get around, and we really only see, like, what is it, two scenes of them actually flying on screen? Very briefly. Most of the rest of the time we know they're flying because the camera is panning down from above, moving through the air. We're seeing it, like, from their perspective. Which is brilliant camera work because it means your visual effects budget can be saved up for that big final epic throwdown. Which is exactly what they did here. There was some makeup work throughout the movie, but mostly they relied on camera work and lighting to get what they were going for. Oh, and there was one scene where David gets set on fire very briefly because his hand hit sunlight.
Yeah, and that was a scene where the effects didn't hold up super well because you could tell it was a fake hand. But, I mean, it was extremely brief, so you kind of had to be looking for it.
Yeah. The effects that they did use were practical. This was the 80s.
Yeah, CGI was a thing, but it was not much of a thing.
So most of our effects got used in the final climax of the movie. And that's where we've got somebody being melted in a tub of holy water. We've got somebody else getting shot through the heart with an arrow that then knocks them into a stereo and electrocutes them and explodes the body because that's totally how electricity works.
Well, do remember, they did warn that not all vampires died the same. Some of them exploded, so.
And then we've got the head vampire who gets impaled and it explodes in the fireplace. And that's just a straight up fireball explosion. Other than that, most of the effects were pretty tame.
Yeah. It was very, very low end on the special effects, even when they went all out on the special effects at the end there.
Yeah, and the thing that went most all out is when the vampire in the tub finishes dissolving, it creates some sort of weird pressure system throughout the plumbing and the whole house. Every sink and fixture explodes in sprays of blood for no reason. Why? Because 80s movie.
Because 80s horror film, blood explosions were a thing.
Yep.
Looking at you, House, Evil Dead 2, how many others?
All of them. All right. So the visual, plus, I mean, everybody's style was very 80s.
How many times will we say 80s in this episode?
I mean, Max's entire wardrobe was very 80s.
Sam's entire wardrobe was very 80s.
Michael and the vampire punks were 80s biker chic.
Lucy was 80s mom.
Is that her fucking name?
Yes, her name is Lucy.
Okay. Grandpa was grandpa. He looked like he just got back from fly fishing in like most of his scenes.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. 80s fly fishing.
80s fly fishing. Star was not exactly 80s.
Neither was Laddie.
It's like, I wonder if when you're a half vampire, if you're still immortal.
Well, I don't know. We know Laddie isn't.
Yeah, because Laddie was missing on a milk carton. But Laddie's style looked like he belonged like in the 1880s.
Talk about dating the fucking movie when you got a missing kid on a milk carton.
Talk about dating a movie when you could afford milk.
Sounds fake. Other things that really make this a time capsule movie. Nobody wears a helmet in this movie. Nobody.
What's a helmet?
Lots of people crowds. This is very clearly a movie that was made pre-COVID. There's several conversations that imply that MTV and TV Guide are still culturally relevant.
This is a direct quote. Are you freebasing? Inquiring minds would like to know.
Yeah, that's a double whammy right there.
Yeah, that's two things that you do not hear anymore.
Also, just to hammer home that this is an 80s movie, there was an obligatory sex scene. Now, it was a tastefully done sex scene, but it really didn't serve the plot at all.
Well, it was tastefully done if you disregard the fact that both the characters were supposed to be teenagers. This movie was really bad about older teens playing young teens and adults playing older teens.
Yeah.
Because the Frog Brothers, who, I mean, what were they supposed to be, like 13, 14?
I don't know.
They were played by a 16 and 17-year-old.
Oh. And of course, the big thing that hammers home that this is an 80s movie, the soundtrack.
You know, there's one thing very popular for 80s movies, though, that this one didn't have.
What's that?
Not every single character had a cigarette hanging out of their mouth.
That is true.
Remarkably, thinking about it, there's remarkably very little smoking in this film.
I think the only cigarettes we see are joints, actually. I don't think I remember seeing a single tobacco cigarette the whole movie.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because there's more than one reference to weed throughout the movie, but not a lot of tobacco products. Huh. Not a lot of heavy drinking either. Even Grandpa is drinking root beer.
There are aspects of this movie that make it seem like it should be a kid's or like a family-friendly movie, and then it's, you know...
And then exploding blood plumbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so such, and that's really what makes it an 80s movie, is that all-over-the-place tonal shift. But it works.
It works. It works very well.
Real quick, I want to touch on one other thing. Maybe I'm just a bad person, but I never really got the concept of all these, being a vampire is so bad movies that came out of like the 80s and 90s. Like, okay, let me get this straight. You never age. You're immune to disease. The main drawbacks are you can't go out during the daylight. You have to drink the blood of people, sometimes animals, depending on your lore. And you have to avoid silver, sunlight, garlic, etc. Where's the downside?
Yeah, I mean, okay, a lot of people like going out in the sun, but whatever. The only one of those that's really that, there's two of those that are downside for me.
You don't particularly want to kill people, which makes one of us. For legal purposes, that is a joke. I am not a murderer.
If the blood drinking could be sustained on non-lethal amounts, I could probably get over it. But if I had to actually like go out and kill people, that would be a problem. Although, I mean, if I had all the other powers of a vampire, I have a list.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I wonder how long I could survive on the... By the way, what did we just cut out there? Nothing. Nothing at all.
I don't know what you're talking about. We didn't cut anything out. Cough, cough. There is one main pro to feeding exclusively off of assholes. There will always be more assholes.
And of course, the other downside for me, I like garlic too much.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Giving up Italian would be
rough.
Of course, if you play by the rules of Lost Boys, then whenever you get a craving for Italian, you just get an Italian family to invite anybody to invite you into their house.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, you basically you walk up
but
to
they have to give you the garlic. That's how it works. That's the trick. They have to invite you in and then give you the garlic.
I mean, of course, do they? Could I just walk in with a big pasta dish and be like, hey, can I come in? I'll share my pasta with you.
I don't know. That's actually a good question. I don't think we're ever going to get an answer to it. So yeah, all in all, a classic 80s vampire movie, one of the vampire greats. That does not mean it is not still a terrible 80s movie, because it is.
Oh, it's so bad. I love it. But it's so bad.
But it's a good, terrible 80s movie. And if you're tired of vampires that sparkle, because they fucking don't, this isn't a bad one to cleanse your palate with.
Just, you know, watch out for the creepy tones of some of the music in the soundtrack.
Yeah. A little bit. Hey, kids. When you're starting to dig the soundtrack on a movie, go actually read the lyrics of the songs before you start singing along. Okay? Thanks, you. Consider that just your little PSA for the day.
I still love the song, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the song slaps, but my God, those lyrics. All right, well, that's all I got. You got anything?
I have just one very important thing to say.
Oh, God, what?
Vampires fucking suck!
That's it for this week. Please consider rating, reviewing, following, and all that other nonsense in your favorite podcast platforms.
If you'd like to tell us how much of idiots we are or send kaiju fan mail, you can email us at tiaadmedia@gmail.com, or you can join us on Discord and the social media platforms listed in the show notes.
You should also check out this great podcast. Who are we promoting this week?
I don't know. We record these well in advance. I guess we'll just have to listen to the promo to find out.
Hello, I'm a sophisticate, and so can you.
Is the name of our podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony.
And I'm another of your hosts, Sydney.
And we're two queer millennials with ADHD.
Who have been lying about our own cultural literacy.
If you've ever been in a situation where you pretended to know more than you do about an important movie or a piece of literature.
Yeah, or like a super cool band.
Then this is the show for you.
This is a show where we engage with the canon so that you don't have to.
Topics for discussion will include such things as,
is Carrie Brownstein the coolest person?
Can anyone who likes the movie Chinatown be trusted?
Why, Tom Waits? Why?
All of these questions and more will be answered on every episode of I'm a Sophisticate and So Can You.
Available wherever you find your podcast.
That was the greatest promo I've ever heard. It moved me to tears.
No, that was just my horrible commentary about vampires. But it was such a good promo that I already forgot who it was for. I guess I have to go check the show notes now.
We'd also like to give a quick thank you to our supporters on Patreon and Ko-fi.
Especially these idiots.
Random Warrior. Rain. And the perpetually banned Athen Mortis.
Thank you.
We couldn't do it without you.
Or could we?
We could, but it wouldn't be as fun.
Definitely not.
If you like what we do, please consider supporting us on Patreon or Ko-fi.
You can get access to episodes a week early, shoutouts in our episodes, and special behind-the-scenes bonus content.
Also, we won't put commercials in our Patreon episodes.
You can find us at patreon.com/tiaadmedia or ko-fi.com/tiaadmedia.
Those links are in our show notes as well.
And of course, thank you for listening to Two Idiots and a Dog.